This is Gail Gray, and you're listening to Guildcast. Happy first anniversary, Guildcast.
Welcome back to this 55th episode of Guildcast for November 19th, 2006. I'm your host, Sean. The last time I introed a show for November 19th, it was in 2005 for episode 1, making this, you guessed it, our first anniversary show. That song you just heard just now is the first time I've played a song that's not quote-unquote pod safe. I know I'm getting a little rebellious and risky on this one-year show, but that song is actually one of my favorite songs of all time, and I just had to play it since it's so perfect for this show. It's called Birthday by the Sugar Cubes, and if they happen to be Guild Wars players and maybe Guildcast listeners and they hear this episode somehow and they don't want their song on my show, then I'll take it down. But otherwise, I just love it too much. So for this show, Lady Sinea and I got together to read over some emails from the last few weeks. That part is not actually very long because, as you're able to tell on the recording, we were dead tired. So it's actually kind of humorous, but it makes for some interesting bloopers at the end, that's for sure. During this segment, though, between each mail that we read, I'm going to play a birthday clip from a listener who may have sent something in. So if you sent in a birthday wishes clip, I'll be playing it throughout the show. Some people who asked to be mentioned this week include Fearless Warrior, Dragon Blind Awe the Third, I guess, I guess that would be the third, Rhetorical Answer, who I actually say hi to in the Skype conversation also, Vladimir Balthery, and Dracula Balthery. As for game updates, on Friday, November 10th, which was last week, they had a few updates. They added the extra pre-release bonus pack character slot to accounts that have both the Nightfall pre-release bonus pack and the Nightfall PvP edition access keys. They updated the translations for the NPC Shiloh, the hero skill NPC in the map Sunspear Great Hall. They updated Corsair bosses Midshipman Morola and Admiral Chiggin so that the bosses drop their correct unique item. They fixed a bug that allowed the skills Rampage as one and Strike as one to activate without a living pet. This I actually mentioned last week also, but they missed it. But this time it's really in there, they promise. They fixed a bug that caused the boss Zelnilin Fastfoot to not attack. They fixed a bug preventing some monsters from fighting in the Consulate Docks mission. They fixed a bug which allowed the attacking team in the Isle of Solitude Guild Hall to open the gate to the defending team's base. They fixed bugs and made improvements to the following quests: Signs Importance, No Me, No Khmer, and Sunspears and Kantha. The most recent My Guild Battles game is now visible to members of the participating guilds for up to 24 hours, which it was previously only available for 1 hour. So that's a huge difference. Now, this episode should come out just before the anniversary party, probably a day before. So I'm still pretty excited about, you know, the whole party and everything and what's going to go down on that. On next week's show, I'll talk more about how the party actually went, and then hopefully within the next week or so after that, I'll have a movie compiled from the video footage that I'll take at the party for everyone else to see. So if you aren't able to make it to this party, hopefully I'll be able to make this movie so you can at least see what went on. Next week's show will also be about farming in-game and how it's changed over the course of Guild Wars, back from the very beginning days of Prophecies. So sit back, relax, and listen to the sleep-deprived ramblings of Sean and Lady Sinea. Okay, so I have 6 emails, and they're all pretty recent. The oldest one is from the 4th, so that's only, what, two weeks ago? That's not too bad.
You're getting better at this.
Yeah. No more 3-month-old emails that I'm reading on the show. Okay, so the first one is actually from Anonymous, and it says, about the Collector's Edition dances. Gail Gray was in Chebec Village on the opening night telling everyone that the person behind the dances wasn't able to put the finishing touches onto them, the disco ball and the fireworks. Also, if you take a look at the dances and the making of DVD, you can see that the Collector's dances are more African-based and the normal dances are much more modern and not just sped-up versions. I believe when I talked about that in episode 53, I think it was, with me and you, where I was talking about the how at first the Collector's dances weren't, you know, they didn't have the fireworks and the disco ball. And I said they were just sped-up versions. But I guess he's correcting me and saying that they're a different type of dance, which I didn't really notice. But so there's that.
Okay. I didn't see them, so I don't know.
Oh, you didn't?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they're just kind of funky. So I guess that's mainly just correcting what I said in episode 53. So I thought I'd point that out.
Hey, Sean. Loudon here. Just wanted to say grats on making it to 1 year. You and Sinea are doing an awesome job. I've really enjoyed listening to the last year's worth of podcasts, especially episode 40, and I'm looking forward to another year of great stuff, so keep it up, man.
Actually, 3 of these, I think? Yeah, 3 of these are regarding that episode 53, the last one we were on. Like, this next one is from Andy. I think it doesn't tell a name. Yeah, just Andy. It says, hi, Sean. I was listening to episode 53, and in one of the viewer emails, someone asked how ArenaNet could possibly make enough money to support themselves. In another podcast, Gaming Steve, there was an interview with Jeff Strain, where they discussed some of the economic and market factors affecting Guild Wars. In particular, they mentioned that in Southeast Asia, they're actually using a free client paid subscription model due to the fact that users over there do most of their gaming in cafes rather than at home. And then he gives a link to that podcast, and he says, if you're morbidly curious. And then he says, another point was that when you average the $50 price point over the 6-month release cycle, it totals $8.33 a month, which is pretty close to the $10 rate of some earlier MMO games. They just have to provide enough incentive for people to keep buying into it.
That's what I was thinking. As long as they keep the person interested and they continue to buy the new chapters, you're basically keeping them as a subscriber.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's almost like the same thing, like you said, you know, $8.33 versus $10. It's almost the same price, but just going at it a whole different way, which is pretty ingenious way of doing it, I think. And then at the end here, he says something I think was pretty funny. He says, also, I do have one problem with Guildcast. I can't listen to it at work anymore. Every time I listen to it, it just makes me want to go home sick and play Guild Wars.
Aww. We're not addicted, I swear.
He basically says, I mean, he says things that we know as far as that. And like he's talking about the pay-to-play in Southeast Asia, that is definitely another way of doing it. And now, as other people have pointed out to me also in-game and everything, is they have the PvP packs, you know, they have the whole store, everything in the store, they're making money off of that. Now they have the, how is that set up now where you can just pay for the PvP version of the game where you can't do any PvE? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and it unlocks everything for that chapter as far as skills go and things like that.
But do you need the actual game itself, or is this like a lower cost PvP only version?
I think you need one copy of one.
Okay.
In order to do that.
Yeah, that makes
sense. You don't have to buy all the additional chapters.
Yeah, that's cool. But yeah, I actually got a lot of emails about this, and mainly people were saying the same thing about the, you know, breaking up the $50 price point over 6 months, and, you know, how it equals, you know, something like World of Warcraft.
Right. You know, even if a person steps away from Guild Wars for a while and two chapters come out and then they come back to the game and realize they want both of the chapters, they almost retroactively pay for, like, the, all that time that they weren't playing Guild Wars, like, if there were to be a subscription fee, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then on the other hand, person doesn't have to buy every chapter if they don't want to.
Yeah, and the best way that they have it set up now is you don't feel obligated to play. You know, if you don't want to buy Chapter 3 and you just have Chapter 1 and 2, you can still play the game, you know, and you don't have to buy the next chapter. And you don't feel like you have to sit there and play just because you're paying that money every month.
Exactly. I've also had people whispering me that just say, hey, I finally bought Prophecies. I'm like, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me that just the other day, too.
Happy 1 year anniversary to Guildcast, Sean, and the remarkable community that has gathered around the warm campfires of this podcast. It's been a remarkable domination of 6 continents. Now I wonder when someone will deliver Antarctica.
Okay, so this third email is also regarding the episode 53, where I talked about the strategy guides. And I know you talked about this last show in your segment. And he has this is a pretty long email. Says, hi, Sean. I'm the assassin Kanthos the Shadow, among other characters, all of whom have Kanthos in the name, from the guild Knights of the Primeval Kings. I've been listening to Guildcast for the last 2 weeks, but managed to listen to all the previous episodes in that time. Really good show overall. Although in most of the Skype conversations with Lady Senea, her voice is severely distorted. My guess is that it's the result of her internet connection being poor.
Shut up!
Skype is pretty infamous for being a little laggy, so it's not entirely her fault. The most current episode was better, though, he says. Anyway, I'm glad I found the podcast, and I enjoy listening to it. Everyone who participates does a really good job. Lady Senea, in particular, has a nice-sounding voice, and having a female on the show once in a while does add some variety to it. So there you go. Okay, so on to his question. He says, in the most recent episode, you talked about previous strategy guides and the lack of a Nightfall strategy guide. I have the Prophecies and Factions strategy guides. Sure, a lot of the information is irrelevant, as happens with any printed materials about an MMORPG. However, the best part of the Prophecies guide are the mission and explorable area maps and the suggestions about various builds. And those are what got me to buy the guide. I'm a bit of a geography geek, but I love looking at maps. And it certainly helps when you're trying to do things like navigating regions that don't have any quests, mm-hmm. For example, running from Temple of Ages to Sanctum K. The Factions guide fails in both areas. Their maps are incomplete, smaller, and less detailed. They focus on listing quests for the areas, but miss a ton. There are many quests that, as far as I know, were available from when Factions first started that aren't listed in the guide. There aren't maps for most of the Jade Sea and Echovald Forest regions. Their build section, unlike the Prophecies guide, doesn't discuss possibilities for combining every class with every other. All they do is give a couple recommended builds, and that's all. The Prophecies guide wasn't super detailed, but did give you ideas for how to make build combining any secondary class with every primary class. Mm. They recommended a few skills and talked about useful combinations. For example, when talking about Monk-Mesmer combination, they suggested using Inspiration Magic to regain energy as a primary healer or protector monk. These two items are the things I was hoping for in the now non-existent Nightfall guide, especially the maps. Sure, they include a small map with the game, but half-page maps for each region in Nightfall would have been really nice. Just my 2 cents. Kanthos.
Yeah, that map that comes in the Nightfall box is a joke. It's like 6 inches by 3 inches.
Didn't you say someone was sending you a collector's edition map?
Yeah, one of my guildies going to send it to me.
Did you ever get that?
He hasn't yet, but...
Oh, okay.
He's listening to the show, so... He knows he has to.
Hint, hint.
But yeah, I'm looking at this guide right now. It's a good point that there's no recommendations of the combining different classes together, which is what the Prophecies Guide does, which was good for, you know, when you're creating a new character, and you say, well, what secondary do I want to choose, you know, and you look at it and see what would complement what and what would you like to do with your character.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the most asked questions of me. I don't know about you, but a lot of people say, hey, I just created a Paragon, what should I make as my secondary? And I think if they would have, if they did make a strategy guide for Nightfall and they included something like that, it would have been a good idea. And also, you know, a lot of people have pointed out to me what I was saying on that show where I talked about, you know, you can always go to Guild Wiki. Well, it's funny that I think as soon as I mentioned that, Guild Wiki went down, and it's been down, or it was down for quite a while. It just recently went back up. But that was a good example of how wrong I was about that, because when you rely on something like that and it's down, it just, you don't have, you have nowhere else to turn, you know? You have a book in your hands, the book isn't going to go down, you know? You got a book and you can turn the pages and it's right there. So that was a good example of how, how a strategy guide, a printed strategy guide, could be very helpful.
Yeah. Plus, I like looking at the map sitting on my desk rather than flipping back and forth between windows.
Yeah, and I do have to admit, I use the Collector's Edition map a whole lot more than any other maps. You know, I've never bought a strategy guide before, but I always went to GuildWiki and looked at maps. And it is a lot more helpful using this printed map. Now, I do have to say, where I work, we do printing, and I've printed out maps of Guild Wars at work, you know, and I have, we print pretty large, grand format printing, so I print large, large posters. Like, I have a poster on my wall right now of the Prophecies map. It's probably about 5 feet by 4.5, maybe. Yeah, it's pretty big. So, I kind of cheated there, I guess, and printed out my own.
Oh, so you're a hypocrite, saying that you don't need a strategy guide, but you print out gigantic maps.
The map part, I would definitely agree with. See, I think the biggest thing that I was concentrating on when I said that you don't need a strategy guide is the fact that the skills change so much, like I mentioned in there. You know, they change the skills so much that you go back and you refer to it in a printed strategy guide, and then you're like, wait, this isn't, you know, this isn't up to date anymore, and they change it so much. But maps, yeah, I would definitely agree that maps are very helpful, although there have been people saying that the map that came with the Collector's Edition is not 100%. Like, if you're going for the 100% Explorer title, this map doesn't show 100%.
Yeah, if you're going for the 100% title, use the accurate maps that they've got on GuildWiki and, you know, overlay them over your own maps and see what you've missed.
And there's plenty of guides to those kind of things, the Explorer guides for each map, actually, for all three chapters, where people have gone through and they even tell the real tricky areas. I guess there's certain areas of Nightfall, and I believe Factions, too, where you have to use Necrotic Traversal to get there.
I think in all three.
Oh, really? Okay.
Hello, Sean, Sananda. This is Mirage. Just wanted to say happy anniversary, Guildcast. Let's hope Guildcast goes on for all of eternity, and I'll be with you guys every step of the way.
So, this fourth one I got, I think we both got this one. It's from Artful Dodger. And what he's basically asking is, out of the elite locations, we have Sorrow's Furnace, Tomb of the Primeval Kings, Underworld, Fissure of Woe, The Deep, and Urgaz's Warren. He's basically asking how we would rank the elite locations for difficulty and rewards. And I looked at this and I thought about it a little while, and I can't, it's hard to say, really, because a lot of these have their own unique pros and cons as far as difficulty and rewards. But I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, with any of those, if you go with a bad pickup group, it's not going to be very easy. Like, I don't go into FOW with pugs anymore.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, maybe if we have six people that we know, we'll pick up two pugs, and then we'll be okay.
Yeah, some of those you can get away with that a little bit more. Like, Sorrow's Furnace and Tombs, you can certainly get away with that a little bit more. And I don't know if that really makes them easier. I would sway that way and say that Sorrow's Furnace and Tombs are probably some of the easiest. UW and Fissure, I think it depends on how you approach it. Like, if you just do UW with, if you did it with the, you know, the 55 and the SS, you just did the beginning part of it, you know, basically. Or one little part of it. But if you wanted to clear out the entire area of either Underworld or Fissure of Woe, that's a whole different ballgame than just doing certain quests. Like, mm-hmm. Especially with Fissure of Woe, if you do the whole thing, that's a big chunk of your day taken out right there. That's pretty difficult. But the rewards are there. You know, you get, especially with experience, Fissure of Woe experience is incredible.
Yeah, you get a lot of experience, but, like, the forest quest is difficult, and the drops are bad. So, I mean, it's worth it because you have fun doing it, but as far as monetary rewards, there's not really that much. I like Sorrow's Furnace because you can jump into a group, and everybody kind of knows what the cookie-cutter builds are, and it's easy to get everyone to be on the same plate, and you get greens, and that's good.
Yeah, yeah. Although the greens aren't really worth as much as they used to be, but there's a few of them that are still. But I guess the same goes for tombs.
We still go for them. I mean, I've got a guildie who needs a Rago's staff, and the people still want the bronze weapons.
Mm-hmm. As far as the Deep and Urgaz's Warren, I've only been there maybe 3 times each. Never made it to the end of those, so those are pretty difficult.
Yeah, I haven't done those enough to be able to rate them in any way, though.
I know the Deep is really difficult just because you have to split yourself up.
Yeah.
Which makes it frustrating. But I'm really curious to see what the new Nightfall Elite missions are. There's supposedly one coming up, as Gale Grey hinted at, and a lot of people think it's, you know, will come with the Winter's Day update. So I wonder what they got up their sleeves as far as that goes.
This is Master Zotos wishing Guildcast a very happy anniversary. Congratulations.
Alright, so this fifth one is not really a question. I just wanted to read it. This guy wants a shout out. He basically just says, "Hey, I was just wondering if I can get mentioned on your show. My game name is Rhetorical Answer," which I think is an awesome name, "and I'm a mesmer. Just want to say that if there are any new players out there that need some starting tips, I would be more than happy to help them. Peace." So
cool.
Just a little shout out there. This last one is from... these names are killing me. Maverinthia. He's on the forums, too. I believe that's how you pronounce it. But he says, I've been away from the game for a while, and now I see a new die thingy. I think that is the official term, new die thingy. Did they change the die recipe colors from the old ones? Since the ones I see on these old charts seem to be brighter from what I'm getting, and I'm just curious if it's different now or what, and if there is a new die chart floating out there. Yeah, the whole die system has changed dramatically. There's not only a new die system, there's new die colors, the die remover is no longer, now it's gray. I mean, I might as well go back, whatever episode that was where I talked about the die, might as well just remove that from the feed because that's no longer valid. But I probably should do another die episode just talking about all the changes and everything.
Yeah, I like the gray armors now. It's kind of cool looking.
Yeah, it looks pretty nice. It's almost like a cheap version of silver, the ghetto silver.
Yeah, well, I usually go for the kind of neutral colors anyway.
I think what they did, though, is they made these new icons, you know, for the dye, which I like them a lot. They look a little darker. And at first, when they first did this, they didn't stack, but they've since fixed that so that the old dye and the new dye will actually stack. And they have a new preview window now for when you mix the dye where you can actually, I think there's 4 slots, and you can just drag your die onto this thing, and it'll actually show your character in the armor, and it'll show the different changes. You know, if you throw an orange and a green up there, it'll show you what it'll look like on your armor before you actually put it on. And then if you throw a blue in there, it'll show you what the 3 combo will look like, you know, before you put it on. And this is wonderful. I mean, this is going to save a lot of people a lot of money. And I played with this for quite a while when I dyed my my Ellie's armor. So it's a pretty good system. I like it a lot. And then plus with the introduction of the white and the brown dye.
Does it work when you're trying to dye weapons as
well?
Yeah,
it does.
I haven't tried it.
I tried that out. It does work.
I like brown dye. Apparently nobody else does, though, so it's only like 100 gold, so good for me. I had one person that I talked to, I think it was yesterday, is Dark Grindelwald, and he was telling me that he liked some of the things that I said about the strategy guide and some other things, and he said, you know, he agreed with a lot of the things that I said, so it was okay. I said, well, I don't think I'm very popular sometimes because I like to whine about stuff. And he said that was okay, though, because it was like I didn't care about what people thought.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, if you're always agreeable and, you know, everything's great, then nobody's going to learn anything. If nobody would have told me about the other aspects of having a strategy guide that I didn't even think about, I mean, I wouldn't have thought about it. And you especially in your rant about it. You really pointed out some things that I didn't think about, you know.
Yeah. I've often wondered if I should start watching my mouth since we know that ArenaNet employees listen to the show, but then I decided, nah.
I don't think we should do that because I think that they're the kind of company that, if they go on Guild Wars Guru and they respond to a lot of the stuff on there, then, you know, we're chump change compared to that because some of the things they say on Guru are just horrible, you know. But I think overall, you and I really respect the game and we really like what ArenaNet does with it. And there's no real reason for... we don't have any really bad things to say about them, so... I mean, every once in a while we do, but... makes it interesting. Keeps it interesting. And I think people like that, you know?
We are of the people, for the people.
That's right. We're down.
Oh, there is a poll going on right now, which is about changing the Skill Hunter title. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
What do you think of it?
Well, right now, it's an overall thing, right? So, and what they want to do is they want to bring it to where it's exclusive for each chapter. So, like, if you get a Skill Hunter for each, for Prophecies, then you'll have that title, and for Factions, you'll have that title. I think, like you pointed out in the forums, that this will, if you max these out, if you get a max Skill Hunter title for Prophecies, Factions, and Nightfall, that's three maxed out titles towards your kind of a big deal title.
Well, I mean, it depends. They're probably going to switch it around a little bit more than that. But basically, it's like, currently, if you get 90 elite skills, it doesn't matter which chapter they're from. You automatically get, I think it's level 1 of Skill Hunter, right? But then, let's say you, when we had Prophecies and Factions, you get up to level 3. You've obtained every single elite skill that was available in those two games. You've literally reached a finite point, a max point, yet it wasn't counted as any type of max title in any fashion. So what they're going to do is make it so that there's like a Tyrion Skill Hunter title and a Canthan Skill Hunter title, so that when you do reach that finite point, it is counted as a single accomplishment.
Oh, okay.
And then what they want to do is also, like, people, let's say they're cartographers, right? And they've gotten 100% of both Tyrion and the Canthan maps, right? That's a big deal. So they're going to have some kind of title to show that they have done multiple continents of that title.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Are they going to do that for protector titles also, for doing...
I think so, but I'm not sure. But I like it because... you know, if somebody's really into doing the mapping and the cartography, you know, that's something that I'm not into. And if I see that and they go, they've done 3 maps worth, I go, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, people do the same thing with my Skill Hunter title. They say, oh, God, I could never take the time and patience to go after all those bosses, right? But I enjoy doing it, so I do it. And then if you had that title, people are like, oh, look at that, that's cool.
I have a feeling in the future they're going to really... expand on the titles a lot more, like they're doing now, you know. It's really taken off and I think it's probably taken off more than they thought, because a lot of people are really enjoying them.
Yeah. One of the arguments against changing these titles like this is that they're saying that people who have worked so hard and spent so much money trying to obtain things like the incorrigible Alehound, you know, is saying, well, that cheapens that. But there's more than two titles for kind of a big deal. It goes up higher than
that. What do you mean more than two? Two levels to that title?
Right. You know how on GuildWiki currently all they have is kind of a big deal and people know me?
Yeah.
I think it's 5 and 10 max titles.
So they're going to make more?
Well, I saw on one of the forums, I forget which one it was, GW Online, and somebody posted 5 titles and Gale was like, who told? All 5 of them are Anchorman references.
Hey, have you beat Nightfall yet?
Not quite. I've gotten to... I finished the Gate of Pain mission. So I think I only have a couple more left.
Yeah, I think you have 2 more. Is that the one in the bottom right corner of the map?
I don't know. It's the one with the River of Souls that looks just like the bridge in one of the Fire Islands missions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're pretty close. I think you have 2 more. Those end game missions and quests are insanely hard.
They're just, like, completely killing me.
Hey, did you get to try that little opening from the Prophecies map to the Nightfall map, where you can go from Dunes of Despair through the Arid Sea and all that? Have you done that yet?
No. What is that?
I heard about it a few weeks ago, that there was a way to do it. And then an ex-guildy of mine from Lost, he actually showed me today, this morning, actually. We left from Dunes of Despair, and then we went through the Arid Sea, and there's a portal near... it's near the place where you get one of the 15 attribute point quests. And you go down there, and there's a Forgotten Guardian, I want to say. I believe that's what it is, Forgotten Guardian. And there's a portal right there, and you talk to him, and he takes you right next to... let me look at the map. The Mouth of Torment, which is, you know, one of the last... areas in Nightfall, and it takes you right next to that, and it's pretty cool because it's a really difficult area. There's a lot of high level creatures, you know, but there's a weaponsmith by there that gives +5 energy weapons, any kind of weapon, you know, for any character. There's some collectors that have some pretty nice weapons, but it's almost like a little bonus area that connects the two maps, you know, instead of taking the boat. But I thought that was pretty neat that they worked that in there.
That is awesome. Yeah, all of the tie-ins between Nightfall and the earlier chapters, those are really cool. Just the references to things. I encountered a quest that directly ties into a bunch of stuff from Cantha, which I thought was neat. It made Cantha a lot cooler all of a sudden. Because it's part of Nightfall.
Happy birthday to you. An entire year you've made it through. Happy birthday, dear Guildcast. Congratulations to you.
Well, you have to say a bunch of stupid stuff so that I'm not the only one in the bloopers.
This is the worst Guildcast ever.
It's all your fault. You suck, Sean. It's a good thing that you edit these so that it actually sounds like we're talking about something intelligent.
Yeah, I need to smack myself around a little bit and wake up.
My coffee's cold. This show never has a point.
Oh yeah, people do stuff on Friday nights. I remember those days.
We are sad people.
Well, maybe we should end this before the train wrecks anymore. At least we'll have a good blooper reel.
The end. End of show. Everybody go play Guild Wars.
Guildcast por la Victoria.